May, 1987.
All the king's horses. 4. I need a mask, he said. The clerk towered above him, grotesquely tall and thin, with a manner as imperious as the pharaoh whose death mask he wore. Of course. His eyes were gold like the skin of his mask. Perhaps you had something specific in mind, sir? Something impressive, Tom said. You could buy a cheap plastic mask for under $2 in any Jokertown candy store. Good enough to hide your face, but in Jokertown, a cheap mask was like a cheap suit. Tom wanted to be taken seriously today, and Holbrook's was the most exclusive mask shop in the city, according to New York Magazine. If you'll permit me, sir, the clerk said, producing a tape measure. Tom nodded and studied the display of elaborate tribal masks on the far wall as his head was measured. I'll be just a minute, the man said as he vanished through a dark velvet curtain into a back room. It was more than a minute. Tom was the only customer in the shop. It was a small place, dimly lit, richly appointed. Tom felt acutely uncomfortable. When the clerk returned, he was carrying a half dozen mask boxes under his arm. He set them on the counter and opened one for Tom's inspection. A lion's head rested on a bed of black tissue paper. The face was done in some soft, pale leather, as buttery to the touch as the finest suede. A nimbus of long golden hair surrounded the features. Surely nothing is as impressive as the King of Beasts, the clerk told him. The hair is authentic, every strand taken from a lion's mane. I couldn't help but notice your glasses, sir. If you'll provide us with your prescription, Holbrook's will be pleased to have custom eyepieces made to fit. It's very nice, Tom said, fingering the hair. How much? The clerk looked at him coolly. $1,200, sir, without the prescription eyepieces. Tom pulled back his hand abruptly. The golden eyes in the pharaoh's face regarded him with condescending courtesy and just a hint of amusement. Without a word, Tom turned on his heel and walked out of Holbrook's. He bought a rubber frog face for $6.97 in a Bowery storefront, with a newspaper rack by the door and a soda fountain in the back. The mask was a little too big when he pulled it down over his head, and he had to wear his glasses balanced on the oversized green ears, but the design had a certain sentimental value. To hell with being impressive. Jokertown made him very nervous. As many times as he'd flown over its streets, walking those same streets was another proposition entirely. Thankfully, the funhouse was right on the Bowery. The cops avoided the darker alleys of Jokertown as much as any other sane person, even more so since the start of this gang war. But gnats still frequented the Joker cabarets along the Bowery. And where the tourists went, the prowl cars went as well. Gnat money was the lifeblood of the Jokertown economy, and that blood ran thin enough as it was. Even at this hour, the sidewalks were still busy, and no one took much notice of Tom and his ill-fitting frog face. By the second block, he was almost comfortable. In the last 20 years, he'd seen all the ugliness Jokertown had to offer on his TV monitors. This was just a different angle on things. In the old days, the sidewalk in front of the funhouse would have been crowded by cabs dropping off fares and limousines waiting at the curb for the end of the second show. But the sidewalk was empty tonight, not even a doorman. And when Tom entered, he found the check room unattended as well. He pushed through the double doors. 100 different frogs stared at him from the silver depths of the famous funhouse mirrors. The man up on the stage had a head the size of a baseball, and huge pebbled bags of skin drooping all over his bare torso, swelling and emptying like bellows or bagpipes, filling the room with a strange, sad music as air sighed from a dozen unlikely orifices. Tom stared at him with a sick fascination until the maitre d' appeared at his side.
"A table, sir?"
He was squat and round as a penguin, features hidden by a Beethoven mask.
"I'd like to see Xavier Desmond," Tom said, his voice partially muffled by the frog mask, sounded strange in his ears.
"Mr. Desmond only returned from abroad a few days ago," the maitre d' said. "He was a delegate on Senator Hartman's world tour," he added proudly. "I'm afraid he's quite busy."
"It's important," Tom said.
The maitre d' nodded.
"Whom shall I say is calling?"
Tom hesitated.
"Tell him it's an old friend."
When the maitre d' had left them alone, Des got up and came around the desk. He moved slowly, thin lips pressed together tightly beneath a long, pink trunk that grew from his face where a normal man would have a nose. Standing in the same room with him, you saw things you could not see in a face on a TV screen. How old he was, and how sick. His skin hung on him as loosely as his clothes, and his eyes were filmed with pain.
"How was the tour?" Tom asked him.
"Exhausting," Des said. "We saw all the misery of the world, all the suffering and hatred, and we tasted its violence firsthand. But I'm sure you know all that. It was in the papers."
He lifted his trunk, and the fingers that fringed its end lightly touched Tom's mask.
"Pardon, old friend, but I cannot seem to place your face."
"My face is hidden," Tom pointed out.
Des smiled wanly. "One of the first things a joker learns is how to see beneath a mask. I'm an old joker, and yours is a very bad mask. A long time ago, you bought a mask just as cheap as this."
Des frowned. "You're mistaken, I'm afraid. I've never felt the need to hide my features."
"You bought it for Dr. Tachyon, a chicken mask."
Desmond's eyes met his, startled and curious, but still wary.
"Who are you?"
"I think you know," Tom said.
The old joker was silent for a long moment. Then he nodded slowly and sagged into the nearest chair.
"There was talk that you were dead. I'm glad you're not."
The simple statement and the sincerity with which Desmond delivered it made Tom feel awkward, ashamed. For a moment, he thought he should leave without another word.
"Please sit down," Des said.
Tom sat down, cleared his throat, tried to think how to begin. The silence stretched out awkwardly.
"I know," Desmond said. "It is as strange for me as it must be for you to have you sitting here in my office. Pleasant, but strange. But something brought you here, something more than the desire for my company. Jokertown owes you a great deal. Tell me what I can do for you."
Tom told him. He left out the why of it, but he told him his decision and what he hoped to do with the shells. As he spoke, he looked away from Des, his eyes wandering everywhere but on the old joker's face. But he got the words out. Xavier Desmond listened politely. When Tom had finished, Des looked older somehow and more weary. He nodded slowly, but said nothing. The fingers of his trunk clenched and unclenched.
"You're sure?" Des finally asked.
Tom nodded.
"Are you all right?"
Des gave him a thin, tired smile.
"No," he replied. "I am too old and not in the best of health, and the world persists in disappointing me. In the final days of the tour, I yearned for our homecoming, for Jokertown and the funhouse. Well, now I am home, and what do I find? Business is as bad as ever. The mobs are fighting a war in the streets of Jokertown. Our next president may be a religious charlatan who loves my people so much he wants to quarantine them,
and our oldest hero has decided to walk away from the fight." Dez ran his trunk fingers through thinning gray hair, then looked up at Tom, abashed.
"Forgive me. That was unfair. You have risked much, and for 20 years you have been there for us. No one has the right to ask more.
Certainly.
If you want my help, you'll have it."
"Do you know who the owner is?" Tom asked.
"A joker," Desmond said.
"Does that surprise you? The original owners were gnats, but he bought them out, oh, some time ago. He's quite a wealthy man, but he prefers to keep a low profile. A rich joker is, well, something of a target. I would be glad to help set up a meeting."
"Yeah," Tom said. "Good."
After they had finished talking, Xavier Desmond walked him out. Tom promised to phone in a week for the details of the meeting. Out front, on the sidewalk, Des stood beside him as Tom tried to hail a taxi. One passed, slowed, then sped up again when the cabbie saw the two of them standing there.
"I used to hope you were a joker," Desmond said quietly.
Tom looked at him sharply.
"How do you know I'm not?"
Des smiled as if that question hardly deserved an answer.
"I suppose I wanted to believe, like so many other jokers. Hidden in your shell, you could be anything. With all the prestige and fame the Aces enjoy, why would you possibly hide your face and keep your name a secret if you were not one of us?"
"I had my reasons," Tom told him.
"Well, it doesn't matter. I suppose the lesson to be learned is that Aces are Aces, even you, and we jokers need to learn to take care of ourselves. Good luck to you, old friend."
Des shook his hand and turned and walked away. Another cab passed. Tom hailed it, but it shot right past.
"They think you're a joker," Des said from the door of the funhouse. "It's the mask," he added, not unkindly. "Take it off. Let them see your face, and you'll have no problem."
The door closed softly behind him. Tom looked up and down the street. There was no one in sight, no one to see his real face. Carefully, nervously, he reached up and pulled off the frog mask. The next cab screeched to a stop right in front of him.